Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
Welcome back, everybody. Guest today is James Sachs. James, great to meet you. Please tell us where you are in the world and what you do for a living.
Let's see. I'm James Sachs. We're located in North Carolina, our headquarter roasting facility. What we do for a living is we developed a clean energy technology, accidentally applied it to coffee roasting, got into coffee roasting because basically changed the chemistry of coffee, made it naturally lower in acids, higher in antioxidants, smoother tasting, did research on that, proved that it was 70% lower in acids. So basically made it low acid. Everything else was high acid, and it helped consumers have heartburn, acid reflux, or just want to feel better about themselves. And then it was clean energy technology. We use waste fuels from furniture mills in North Carolina, combust that cleanly, and that is our fuel source to go back to this energy intensive process. Patent the technology, or in patent pending, and then launch the brand, the company. And that's kind of where we're at. It started in really South America, moved to the United States, and that's where we are practicing our trade right now, is in North Carolina throughout the U.S.
That's awesome. So do you have any kind of like sides of the business with this patented technology that you have? Are you just using it for like the ultimate goal of like making this coffee and selling it? Or like, do you have that technology licensed anywhere else? Is that another like source of revenue?
Oh, no, that's a good question. Is that actually, it was really meant to heat greenhouses and warehouses as a cheap fuel source. But the founder and inventor of the technology was ag engineer, went down to South America to dry crops. One of the crops he was drying was coffee, using the coffee hulls, and basically saved them time and money from having to ship their coffee down the mountain to a crop dryer, bring it back up, package it up. So what we do is like a micro dryer on the farm using their waste fuels, and it really saved them about 30-40% of their costs of the whole production cycle from picking to drying. And a farmer says, hey, you dry coffee like we roast coffee, low temperature, using these slow, and they did it for taste, had gotten away from that because the Germans developed a flash roasting system in the 50s and went to kind of high volume, short period of time, industrial revolution. So basically the founder, the inventor of the technology says, well, I want to get into this, was from the US, brought it back to the United States, Northern California, and was next to a food and wine school, University of California, Davis. A researcher said, something's different about this. I'm in a project on acid and coffee. Just finished one on antioxidants, like you guys to jump in. It's mine. It's proprietary. So the company basically said, look, we'll push all the chips in, see if this is really a different tech. Does it really do what we think it does? And it did. So the research got published, sent us out in the world, and that IP got applied to coffee roasting, but it does have other applications down the road, but heating, creating electricity, everything, anything that basically can be done with an alternative energy source, we could do. So, but right now it's coffee roasting. That's what we do.
So. That's awesome. Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about, can you tell me a little bit more about the process? Like, and I guess I'm more curious, like what kind of benefits does the lower acid have as far as taste goes? And, you know, just the fact, like if you do suffer from acid reflux or something like that.
So if we broke out like the global coffee market, one in five people have issues with coffee, and whether it be heartburn, acid reflux. So right there, there's a need for anybody who has that, is that basically it'll reduce those symptoms. So that's why low acid's big. Add in like your teeth. So basically the lower the pH, the harder it is on your dental. Low pH, which we're a high pH coffee, low pH has issues potentially with other issues, bladder, other aspects of your life, is that your body only has a certain amount of pH it can take in, you know, in terms of relative amounts. And coffee is the number one source of basically acid. So if you have an issue, you go in your doctor and you have heartburn, acid reflux, to tell you to cut out coffee, orange juice, peanuts, chocolate, tomatoes, but generally no one wants to cut out coffee. So this is kind of where we filled in. And the consumer right now is about one in five, we think, globally. So if you go into Mumbai, Tokyo, Saudi Arabia, it's that customer is the same all over. And that's the upside of it. And then taste, it's smoother. It has no bitterness. It has smoother aftertaste. So our first coffee was an espresso. You get the full effect of the espresso, no bitterness. And we have retail stores in Miami, or pilot one, and the number one selling, or second number selling product is espresso. And you can do it side by side with a high acid coffee, and that's bitter and acidic. So if you just have pure coffee, it's smooth, no bitter aftertaste. And that's another benefit of the roasting tech. So we were just on a conversation earlier with a country where we'd look to develop outside of a build a facility. Mm-hmm. It has a smooth taste profile. It's better for you. And it's a clean energy technology. So it's part of the circular economy. It's better for it. We're taking ag waste fuels, burning it cleanly, and potentially creating carbon credits with our carbon offsets.
Yeah, that's awesome. And speaking of, I want to ask you, because I saw you had the one retail store, and I know that it says one is coming soon, also near Miami. I know you're based out of North Carolina. Why the retail stores in Florida? I'm just curious.
That's a good question. It's a company that came out of South America, and really Miami is the kind of bridge between North America and South America, and it's just right. A really cool customer. So basically we went there. It was a dynamic opportunity to go open for that. We had looked at a lot of other locations, not to say that other locations would be worse. It just became this great place to, we developed kind of an authenticity model. If you walk in our coffee stores, it's about origins, it's about authenticity. It's about where it came from, not as much about the kind of chemistry differences or the research and publication, but it's really to focus on the qualitative part of our company, not the quantitative part. And that was proving out the success. And that's why we did, is that when you're out there developing a product, taste is always important. You know, you get a demographic off of that. And so that's why we went into retail, because we had other channels working, but that was a channel we wanted to prove. Kind of when you go into a competition, if you want to sit down globally and saying, hey, well, does it taste good? Well, here it is. We're the number one selling espresso in Miami. We're the, you know, best selling cold brew in Miami. So that kind of type of thing was why we did it.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. And as far as other verticals are concerned, obviously you sell online. I see you even have a subscription model for your stuff online, which I think is smart for a CPG thing like coffee. It's sort of massively consumed. If your whole family's drinking it, you need a lot of it, right? Are you in any other channels? Do you sell it through any marketplaces? Are you on like Amazon, or do you just kind of do the direct to consumer and then you have the retail store?
We have retail. So we sell in retail stores with ground or whole bean right now. That's kind of a minimal footprint, like mm-hmm. Kroger, Publix, Natural Grocer, to name a few of the grocers. And then we have what we call e-commerce. And so that's Walmart.com, Amazon.com, Vitacost.com. As you know, that kind of, that's how we separate it out. Then we have DTC. And then we have our retail stores. And then we have another channel looking to, that's kind of more B2B food service that is going to be launching the end of this next year, because we brought single serve coffee making inside. So it allows us to scale. And that's a big opportunity, not only from K-cup or single serve coffees to Nespresso capsules we'll be doing internally. And that's very food service driven and retail driven as well.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And what would you say is kind of like the, which one of your verticals is like the biggest revenue driver for you? Is it the D2C? Is it the Amazon or Walmart e-commerce? What does that kind of breakdown look like for you?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that retail and e-commerce are the biggest. You know what I mean? If you go side by side, at each month, they may differ. Those, because, for example, if you add 100 new retail stores, right, it comes with that. And then Amazon and Walmart and Vitacost were launched prior to our DTC. But our DTC is scaling really quickly. And I think you guys have seen this, is that COVID really just had this customer adopt all types of online models, especially direct to consumer. Yep. And then actually we're just implementing a new subscription program starting in May 1. And the subscription model, as you just said, is just DTC driven, it's coffee driven. And we've seen as more and more consumers want variety, choice, bundles, packages, you know, coffee of the month. And you generally can't get that through a retail opportunity. So you have to go through the DTC, and it's been a lot of fun because the data you get from your DTC is radically different than you get from e-commerce or retail.
Yeah. Radically more and different, which is the best thing, right? Yeah.
Well, no, it's like literally having a conversation directly with the customer on a daily, hourly basis. Mm-hmm. And it's a really intimate relationship, and it's cool. We love that. It's because we have a ton of content. We have a ton of, we want to tell. And sometimes we're so disruptive in terms of not only as a technology, but as a company, that if you go through other parties, it'll get diluted or kind of dumbed down. So we get this really kind of elevated conversation with all of our customers, from Mrs. Smith to Mr. Jones to John and Karen. They all get to learn about our technology, our process, in a really kind of open basis. Take in as much as you want. So it's been fun for us because we did start really out in e-commerce and retail. And then this has been the latest channel that we're really investing heavily in.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I want to ask you too, because I don't see this a lot. And one of the challenges with, you know, doing D2C with, you know, something at the price point that, like, you know, these coffee bags are, is obviously with, like, you know, the shipping costs relative to what somebody might want to buy. It's just like if they want to buy a single bag from you. So I see you do the $5 two-day shipping. I need to know, like, how you even have that as like a feasible option, because it's been, and all the, a lot of podcasts, if you listen to any other podcast, I mean, it's like like probably one of the main pain points for so many e-commerce driven brands in the CPG area. So can you tell me a little bit about how you have your logistics and your fulfillment set up, or you're able to do something like that?
So that's really a good question, because when we moved from California to North Carolina, that allowed us to achieve those prices because this is just reality in California. Gas taxes are that much higher. In any state that has high gas taxes, that's going to be put into the shipping costs. Mm-hmm. Not by you, by the group you're working with on the logistics. North Carolina is ideally situated for logistics companies. I mean, it is. It's off of 40. They've driven that down. Their gas taxes are extremely low. They have very good modal shipping. And a lot of the big companies, whether it be UPS, FedEx, have all kind of based hubs out of there. We wouldn't have been able to do this in California, just flat out. I mean, we moved out of California for scale reasons and also for the ability to grow and access our main stores, our Miami stores, in an efficient way. So it's interesting when you look at CPG companies, you have to be realistic where you're launching. You can use 3PLs on those sites, but we're vertically integrated. We ship everything. Everything's produced to order. That's why we brought single serve and we build our own roasting equipment. We're a vertically integrated company that way. And it was important for us. So the pricing was really worked on. We drive cost out all the time, whether it be packaging or shipping or things like that, work with our suppliers, and it's scale. To achieve that, you have to have scale. And that's why we did it. But I think, there's a lot of companies getting more efficient in their logistics. Just coming out of Shop Talk, the last mile is huge for everyone. And I think a lot of the technology is driving those costs down. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so that's where we drove in it. So how we got there was not, overnight. It was due to a process. And that's saying, okay, plus our margins are very good to we give it back, what I mean, to the customers. So,
yeah, no, that makes sense. And I mean, I think having ownership of, some of the parts of that process definitely helps. And just like general geographic location obviously helps as well. Like some of the toughest places to run your logistics out of and do your fulfillment out of are also like the hot spots for probably the most entrepreneurs exist that are like upcoming. So it's kind of like oxymoronic that way. But I think it's interesting for people to know, like, because you don't see this a lot. And maybe it might inspire somebody to say, like, hey, maybe there's somewhere better who could relocate. If I have that opportunity as an entrepreneur in CPG, anybody that's listening, they might say it might be worth it. Like even maybe just like tossing the idea around to say, like, take a look in North Carolina and maybe in the Midwest and Ohio and the Indianas and stuff like that.
Well, I will give them names in North Carolina. You're exactly right, as you have to consider last mile logistics. I think we're talking, before we came on to jump into the technology and the ability to scale in DTC is there, but 5 years ago, it really wasn't. What I mean? That COVID really accelerated a lot of software as a service companies to really, for you to efficiently learn, deliver, build, ship out, and it's still escalating. I think prior to COVID, it really wasn't there. So you couldn't really scale it as fast and understand who you and me are as a customer. Mm-hmm. And then communicate as effectively through email marketing or other types of marketing. But I'll give them the names of North Carolina, but you're right. I think Ohio, anybody, Kentucky, Ohio, you got to look. Well, Amazon built their airport in Kentucky, and that wasn't, an accident.
Yep.
So, was through intense research. So.
Yeah, I'm a New York native, but I lived in Cincinnati for a couple of years, right on the like Ohio-Kentucky border. And yeah, I know a lot of those changes happened while I was there. I mean, there was a lot of warehouse investing in Kentucky and even in northern Ohio. And again, like it's no secret why. Like it's not meant to be a secret. It's just the way that it is. You think about the last mile, and you think about just like even just like from the regulatory side. I mean, there's better places to be to operate a business. There just are, plainly. So I think it's a good insight. I think it's not something people always take into account. I don't think enough. When you're thinking about starting a business, it does matter, and it can be monumental differences depending on where you are. So I think it's important people know that. But yeah, no, that's awesome. And let me just ask you this: like, you think about driving more econ. I know this is said it's kind of like the fastest growing vertical for you. So what kind of things do you employ on the marketing side? I know you mentioned email marketing, which is like in my mind. It's still one of the most important ways to do your marketing, even in 2024, is still emailing, especially driving recurring business. But what kind of other verticals do you employ? Do you do any like, paid ads on Meta, Facebook, Google? Are you bigger on like kind of social media channels? What was your like general marketing strategy for driving more direct to consumer business?
And all of the above. And we use, no different than anybody. We use kind of a precise and targeted way of getting at it for our consumer. Obviously, customer acquisition cost is extremely important. Then you kind of go to places. We know how to go and target them. And you're right. We're in Google, Meta, social media. It's a mix. It depends on kind of what we're doing in that quarter, what we want to go after. But we use a blend of, it was interesting. I was hearing a data point come on how many times you have to reach a customer before they buy you. And that's not new. I mean, that goes back 200 years ago.
Yeah, right.
And someone said it's 12 touch points or 12 viewing before they have to see
like, so interactions in any which way. Yeah.
And so that's what I think is so exciting now. There's so many more ways to see a product, social media, X. X is jumping up for us and it's been really impressive. Then you got Google, Meta, and there's multiple ways. And we, do marketing at point of sale through our retailers. So that's one way. And sometimes that customer doesn't always buy at Amazon. They'll come to your DTC or they'll learn it on Meta and buy on Amazon. We try to make it as seamless as possible for the acquisition, for our product, since we're in these really three main ones, verticals for us to acquire. I think our market, we have strategies, to employ different verticals going down for marketing. But right now it's limited really kind of to mid funnel. You know what I mean? We've done some influencer, micro influencer marketing, but we're not CTV. We're not a major influencing. It's pretty still a kind of mid funnel in terms of that.
Yeah, that makes sense. This is one of the biggest areas of variability, I'll say, with a lot of online CPG brands is kind of their existence on social media. Because there's so many that only exist on social media. They do all their sales through TikTok shop and they basically do nothing else. And there's a lot of really successful CPG brands I've met with that barely even have a social media presence at all, and they just rely on the more traditional paid advertising and things like that. So I don't think any which thing is really necessarily better or worse at this point. I think it's like you say, it's just important to be a little bit more omni-channel these days with your marketing, because it does take so many impressions to get an acquired sale. And I think I actually read something recently that a lot of those numbers are impressions. Usually you get those from usually a one or two sources. I think when you can kind of mix it up and get impressions through different platforms, whether it's maybe one on Google, one on Meta, one on Instagram, or one on Facebook, one on Instagram and on TikTok, and then in email, then you can drive that down from 12 to maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 when you could see it across different platforms. That I thought was a really interesting kind of take on those numbers too.
No, I agree. I think that's, if you can get it into 5, that's the most beneficial way. I've been around a ton of marketing. I remember I didn't come from this business. I didn't come from CPG. I came from kind of government finance. And I was blown away when I met some marketing people, because I met some very savvy ones in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But it's an art and a science. You know what I mean? It's like fly fishing. You know what I mean? You meet these good fly fishers and they have it down, but it's an art. I mean, they know how to do it extremely well. There is some secret sauce to it. I don't think it's easy to do. And I think what we've honed in internally is bringing good people, understanding it. And the methodology can change by obviously company. As you just said, it's like someone just 100% TikTok shop. If it's working, stay at it.
Double down, right? Yeah.
Coffee is such a different product because, you're trying to make someone leave a product that they either love or they don't want. So where can you go with the highest conversion, the lowest conversion? Where on the funnel are you going to go? It's a really fascinating thing. As I said, I've been in this 30 years. I still get excited about marketing, new marketing ideas. TikTok Shop is so cool to me. I don't use it personally or professionally. I'm just so amazed at its scale and how fast it's gone. We have it in a kind of beta form, but it's not really kind of any type of revenue form. You just see companies driving revenues. And this thing, I don't know when it started. Is it 12 months old? I mean, I don't know how
TikTok
long.
TikTok shop? Not even, I don't think. I think it's less than a year. Yeah.
And it's just amazing, the customer acquisition, people's, that's what I mean. We're in a revolution of e-commerce right now and DTC and, and marketing. And I want to be in this 30 more years because we're just at this early stages of, marketing and customer acquisition and product development. And it's interesting, you're seeing big CPG really adapt quickly. I mean, I've been around some of the big CPG companies who've quietly said, we're going all in on these types of mediums, which generally they used to be slow to. You know what I mean? They were slow to move into Amazon. They were, so you had a little bit more room to run. They're all very savvy. They're all, the big CPG is all in here. The big companies know exactly what they're doing. And for me as a customer, it's great. I could purchase any product in my town. Let's say I'm in rural North Carolina or rural Minnesota. I can get these products delivered to my door as quickly and as efficiently as possible. But, pre-COVID, it wasn't as easy. Amazon was really the primary source.
The only, really, honestly. Yeah.
And then look at Walmart.com. It's scaling of that. And then all the other companies scaling behind it. So as a customer, it's a pretty exciting time. I mean, minus the inflation. If I take out inflation, which, I got to tell you, I have to hold my breath. If it keeps going up, I don't know what we're all going to be doing. But it's really a revolutionary time for us to be in this game as a marketing company and as a coffee company. And you know what's cool, but you look at coffee and go into this, is that they always talked about waves of coffee, we're in the third wave or second wave. There's never a wave. It's just constant. Consumers are drinking more coffee. They're drinking less alcohol. They're willing to experiment. They're willing to try. And then if I just bring up La Colombe coffee, which is to me relatively new, sold for $900 million last year to Chobani. It just wasn't out of the blue, but it really, it wasn't like something was on a massive path. Then you look at, you know, some of the companies have gone public in the last couple of years, like Black Rifle, Dutch Brothers Coffee.
Yep.
Consumer has just this infinite appetite for coffees. And so I always tell, you know, there's room for everyone in this business because the consumer just keeps adding to their cabinet or their machine. They're willing to dry in espresso capsules. And as long as you deliver to them, as long as you execute, right, the last mile satisfaction abilities, if they have a subscription, you don't screw up their subscription type stuff. So it's, this is just a fun space to be in. You know, I mean, all coffees are welcome. And then globally, you're seeing more countries produce coffee again, just like Congo, Uganda. I mean, the countries that were pretty much war-torn in the 90s are now producing coffee again and just exporting aggressively because we're seeing more countries produce than we've ever seen before. And that's pretty exciting. So
yeah, no, it is. I mean, the coffee specifically spaces, there's been so much ingenuity and I think marketing with a lot of these like Black Rifle and these things and just like finding these really specific niches. Like in Black Rifle, obviously is like veteran made, supported by everybody who wants to support veterans, but also it goes even beyond that. It's like, you don't have to be a veteran yourself. You don't even have to maybe personally even know anybody who's a veteran. That just storyline in and of itself is something that I think people just wanted to support. And then they're just general branding too. It's just very like the Black Rifle is very like an anti-trend almost, you know. It's almost like the what's the water that does like the Liquid Death. I think they kind of took a page out of that book. And I see a lot of brands kind of taking a page out of both of those companies' books and just saying, you know, we're doing something that we know everybody loves and it's very competitive, and the marketing kind of becomes these like anti-trends, which I love. I think that that's been like some of the funnest, I think, to watch.
I agree. So we were really a tech company. I mean, we developed a technology. We've always focused on our tech, on what we do, how it's made, you know, what's it affect. We're really more of like an Intel than we are like, say, a Liquid Death, you know, just most savvy marketers out there. We just developed this technology and it can be applied to other companies. This could be a process roasted by, you know, like for example, an Intel Inside. And that's kind of the company's goal as well. Our sixth vertical, which will be launching and it's licensing probably August. We have meetings outside this country and inside this country with people where we'll use our process logo. And that's sort of basically it'll be Puros, roasted by Puros, and it's targeting their consumer and their portfolio. And that's where we admire like a Liquid Death, where they just incessant marketing and they're just phenomenal at that. That would probably see our weak point today. So we could go partner with people who have a good marketing message we could attach to it and they could sit there and pull in, because a lot of people are loyal to the brand, but then also don't want to leave it. So we would offer them a low acid coffee. And that's actually a huge vertical that we have in our projections that is big. And I mean, it could be just almost a key coffee company in Japan. It could be part of their process. We're not talking, that's why I'm mentioning them. We were talking with a lot of international companies. This would go in their portfolio of types of coffee, you know, decaf, low acid, flavored.
Yeah, right.
So, and that's been the exciting part of coffee is that everybody's investing in it. If you go look at a lot of the major alcohol companies out there, they're looking at coffee because people are drinking less alcohol and they want to look at beverages, either roasted or RTD into that. And so it's a pretty exciting space overall for coffee. And I got to bring out a compliment to Dutch Brothers. And I mean, they started in a small town in Oregon, and now they're the highest selling per unit coffee company in the world at $1.9 million per unit.
Really? I did not know that. Yeah. I mean, I'm familiar with the name. I had no idea it was at that level. That's wild.
Yeah. And they're global. And so I just always sit there and marvel at like people take risks and going after consumer, taking a different model. And it's the same with us, is that we basically came from the tech side. We're on a roasting tech side. We're really talking about our roasting process and the technology, how it makes coffee better. There's other brands who market better. I mean, by far, you know what I mean? They're just a lot better at us. But what we can do is right now we're kind of brick by brick in these channels. We think we can make XYZ brand better with our tech,
right?
But they may know their customer better and they know how to launch that better. And that's what we do on a kind of a daily basis. But outstanding time to be in DTC e-commerce, because the endless aisle is really like, if you step back, it's like a grocery store is going to look a lot different in 10 years because of all the tech that's being developed on, you know, last mile, on fulfillment, on marketing, on customer, you know, awareness. You may just go into the store, tap an order, and it, you know, maybe at your house or just obviously what's happening with pickup and that aspect. So if someone says, wow, this is really stressful time, Yeah, it could be if you look at it that way, or it could just be this like, can't wait to get in. Cause I thought the food business, in all honesty, was getting pretty boring. You had Amazon, you know, you had limited channels. Everything's opening up to where Hy-Vee and, you know, the Midwest is so comprehensive in the retail media.
Yeah.
That it's like, wow, that they didn't have that 3 years ago, let alone 5 years ago.
Yeah, there's a lot of new in the logistics side and the fulfillment side of things. There's a lot of new in the digital marketing side of things. Like, literally, TikTok Shop has probably made who knows how many millionaires in the past year just since it's been open with their brands, or million-dollar brands, I should say.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's crazy, and it is a really exciting time. And that's, we have had, I think, just coincidentally, a lot of people coming on the podcast in the CPG space, and it's a very common experience, I'll say. It's just like, all the mediums still work, but the social media, I think, specifically is something that I just hear, like, so much ingenuity and just everybody doing different things, and they're all equally as successful. I think there's just so much opportunity for, like, a lot of creativity left. I don't think anybody's like kind of falling into like one specific type of campaign. I think it's really just like, especially in TikTok, it's just like the Wild West out there. It's so hard to tell what's going to work. And all it takes is that one thing. You could get 75 million views in no time, and then you're set on that platform for quite a while. So yeah, no, it's awesome. It is really exciting. I'm glad you have that perspective, because like you say, you could take the perspective, like, it can be overwhelming, it can be stressful, but within that is also, I think, an extremely large opportunity for CPG moving forward, and specifically coffee. So definitely agree with
that. That's what's like fly fishing. I mean, you just literally throwing your fly in the water, and then all of a sudden it just, nothing's catching. And then you look at the really good ones. As you just said, it is the Wild West, but it's a lot of fun. If you're into that kind of innovation and development, trial and error, you know, that's all about science. Not everything works. You fail, you learn from it, you understand it. But then all of a sudden, how did it work? Like, all of a sudden, as you said, the potential virality of it's to me, it's like, that's why we play the game. You know, that's why it's kind of fun, is that the magic happens, right? It's movie making or whatever the analogy is. And TikTok's been fun for me from learning. Just anecdotally, I have a daughter who does all of her shopping, food, on TikTok.
Really? I believe it. There's definitely no shortage.
She's in the grocery store looking. She learned about this brand and she's applying it. She does retail. She goes into the retail store.
Yeah.
So it's impressive to me that, like, you can influence purchasing decisions at a grocery store with TikTok. And these are big brands that she's bought too. For everybody says that, you know, this top of funnel stuff, or wherever you want to put it, will change the dynamic. And I think, you know, obviously Kroger and these big guys are realizing it too, because they have their own, you know, marketing on TikTok. So, and honestly, if we started with all this 15 years ago, when we really kind of effectively launched, we would have been a lot faster growth, just because there's just so much more opportunity to communicate. If you have the right product, you have the right people, you know, if you have the right business model, at least internally, you know, these shows, these trade shows like Expo West and you know, Fancy Food. What's hard is everybody gets frustrated because the cost to market a product in retail is extremely expensive, you know, to get it on the shelf, to get it off the shelf.
Right.
And then supply chain is huge, because it's not finally get it off the shelf, but you don't have the replenishment product to come in soon enough to basically get that customer. So you always have to have a different tool for that customer to buy. If you're out of stock, where can they go? You know, Walmart connects to pretty well to .com, that type of thing. I still think retail is extremely important. I mean, all of us go out there. If it's a big part of your methodology, I would emphasize it. I just think supply chain on that side is really difficult for a small brand. So if you're going to start out, don't start there. You know what I mean? End up there. But with DTC, you control the supply chain. As you're saying, spend time on how you want to get it to them. If you can get everybody product within 2 days in every zip code, or 3 days or 4 days, then you're going to win. You're going to have higher, basically your customer acquisition costs can be lower all down the line, and then your customer acquisition will be higher. This is a great time to launch a brand into DTC, into e-commerce for that. But, it's crowded. Yeah. I mean, obviously, nothing's guaranteed. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah. No, it's crowded, but there's just so much room, as we keep talking about, because it kind of just goes back to social media in my mind. I mean, unless you can find something that's like very niche and do it kind of traditional fashion with like targeted ads and things like that, like that's very much still works. But I think there's so much opportunity for visibility to do something new, which on social media, which like used to be very hard. It used to be extremely expensive when you could only really had the opportunity to do like paid digital ads. If you didn't have the money, nobody was going to see it. Now you could be a brand new company that's made 5 sales and you just keep posting on your TikTok and somebody loves it. Somebody famous on TikTok reposts it. All of a sudden you have 5 million people looking to order it, and then you're just good. You know what I mean? It's also an interesting point. You're coming up in this space.
It's disrupted all of advertising. You know what I mean?
No, so it has, for sure.
It used to be just the traditional advertising, right? Print, you know, TV and radio, and then it evolved a little bit more, but that's also flowed up to where I think it's probably making a lot of executives nervous in the, well, you're seeing layoffs happen throughout the major media, so it's it's obviously disrupted everything, so.
No, it definitely
I have
has
a question for you on TikTok, and it's to me is that I can't believe they would force a sale on TikTok. I understand some of the complications in terms of the information, but it scares me.
It scares me as a person,
that if they are able to take away a medium of marketing like that, and hopefully, you know, it doesn't change, but I've just been nervous about that because, and this is, I don't know if it's political or not, because it seems to cross over many different things, is that you force a media company to sell like TikTok, does it change the dynamic of it? I mean, is there fine tuning they can do with it? Because I've known all people marketing on it, they never had problems with how many customers are on it. So it's an interesting debate to have outside of that, is that if you could control media, because I came from the regulatory side. I was in the Department of Justice in the antitrust division. And, you know, it's FDA has it, do no harm. You don't want monopolies happening.
Right. Yeah.
But you also don't want to weigh on the scale either. You know what I mean? So,
no, that's hard. I think the general concerns seem to have been, I mean, they've had problematic things with their terms of service. I know it's always been a big thing. And they even had a hard time getting on the iOS platform to begin with, just because of Apple's concern with security versus like what the language in their terms of service was. So that's always kind of been problematic. I mean, everything that I hear, like official reports and official, statements that have been being made by people like pushing for it to be like having to be sold, have basically just been that they're concerned the Chinese Communist Party's, which is the predominant party in China's, inclusion into pretty much every major industry and every major company that comes out of the country of China, that they would in turn have basically malicious intent. That's what like politicians have been saying, essentially.
So I don't really. If it does get a for sale, who do you think will buy it?
Probably like, I don't know, like maybe Bill Gates or I don't know. I mean, it would have to be somebody with, it's a multi-billion dollar platform. Yeah. And like for it to be, for somebody to buy like a majority stake in it, I mean, it would have to be billions of dollars in cash. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know if it doesn't necessarily have to be an American. I think the concern of the government basically is just that they just don't want this to become a vessel for data mining by maybe what could potentially be, malicious intent coming out of, one of our major adversaries. So I think that's kind of the concern. And
well, it's an interesting debate that's kind of happening out there. And I just want to ask you, because obviously you're probably more dialed in than just, us as a standalone vendor. You're talking to multiple companies out there. I mean, I have a concern if they're able to do this, they could do it with anything. You know what I mean? They control that. But it's, and as you said, you go into social media, I've been following influencers more and more just as an academic side. Mm-hmm. And it's such a cool business because it's high risk for them. You know what I mean? It takes a long, it's like you're building your own brand. And then it's Mr. Beast, right? Who, I mean, you want to talk about, I mean, this, phenomenal. It just what he's developed, how he's done it, what he's doing now.
Yeah.
And that's just the coolest thing to me. I mean, it starts out with zero, right? I mean, it's just a one listener. Mm-hmm. Takes to the point where he's the global icon out there. And he's also doing it from a qualitative standpoint, like kind of a doing well by doing good, which is that Malcolm Gladwell line,
Exactly.
Thing. And so it's pretty cool. That's what I love seeing is the innovation on that and doing products that come off of a TikTok, everybody will create a coffee. I think it's fine. I mean, if it works, it works. And, if you can deliver, I mean, coffee people, they get angry if their coffee doesn't get delivered on time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or if you're out of stock, you don't get delivered, it's tough to gain that customer back. But it's phenomenal, the time of marketing. And anybody you talk to, like you come up these marketing events like Shop Talk, Grocery Shop, and I'm only going to give them credit because they've created an amazing atmosphere for discussion, innovation, education. And it's like, wow, like you just can't wait to get started right when you leave that event. You consume so much information and it's only benefiting the customer, like, getting product to you affordably. As you said, the $5 shipping in 2 days, we would not have been able to offer that 4 years ago, 2 years ago. And it's just because of what's happening in the macro environment and then what we've worked on, internally. So
it's really impressive that stood out. That was one of the things that stood out to me the second I pulled out the website. I was like, wow, really? And like, I get a $30 order, $5 two-day shipping. That's pretty unheard of, honestly, I will say. I don't know if that just happens to be a lot of the small or like growing brands that I like to buy from happen to just be based out of maybe California and New York, because I'm a New York native. So maybe I stumble across those more. But I mean, yeah, it's been, I think, more problematic for, you know, for people trying to get their shipping out, especially when things need to be cold or frozen shipped. That's where things really can get like really expensive and dicey. But yeah.
Yeah, well, coffee, you know, also dimensions, if you go into the, you know, the kind of the how it's made, is dimensions matter a lot.
Right.
You know, so if it's basically small dimensions, heavy weight, it's better for it. You know, so if, yeah, you're shipping a six pack of liquid, going to be able to do it. We do have an RTD that's launching an iced coffee. And so we still haven't figured out that shipping cost. Mm. So it's not going to be cheap. I know that.
Yeah.
It won't be $5 in 2 days. So
right.
Unless we want to eat a lot. It's one thing I think companies should always work on. And, you know, I think they do. It's just that it could happen that they just can't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or at least not yet. So,
No, for sure. And well, James, I just want to say thank you for coming on. I really appreciate your time. I hope we get a chance to talk again, because yeah, I want to keep hearing more about this, especially I think a little more on the tech side of things.
Yeah.
This was such an interesting like grassroots for you, and then coming into this like direct to consumer with like starting in the tech side of it is really, really fascinating to me. So I really appreciate your time today. I just want to say thanks for coming on. We should continue success.
Yeah, Matt, and, thanks for having me on. You know, this is great. I could talk all day.
Absolutely.
So let's get together and drink some coffee and have a good one.
Thank you, James. Thanks, everybody. Right.